Hello and welcome to this podcast, Getting to Grips with Population Health. My name is Dr. Pauline Foreman. I'm a GP in Watford and the Medical Director for Primary Care Development at the Royal College of GPs. This is one in a series of podcasts that aim to provide support and resources for primary care networks and the many other organisations working at scale in the UK. I'm really delighted to be joined today by Dr. Catherine Thomas, GP and consultant in public health medicine and an academic in Wales. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks very much, Pauline.
Catherine, you've had an unusual career path. You started your career in general practice and then trained in public health medicine. What was it that triggered that shift?
Yes, I started as a GP in a deprived part of Liverpool. That was a choice to work in challenging areas. And it was actually probably quite similar to what's happening now with primary care networks when in the late 1990s we had primary care groups that were supposed to be primary care led NHS. It was a whole, you know, change in the ethos then. And I got precipitated into being our local primary care group chair. So I went from just not just being a GP, but being a GP who was just doing personalised care. That was my job. I saw, you know, looking after the people who were registered with us. And suddenly I had to be thinking about a whole population, a whole community, much bigger than just my practice. So that kind of made me think a bit more about population health. And I started doing a master's in public health just for my own benefit. Anyway, one thing led to another and I ended up doing the full public health training alongside GP, doing the two together. And then eventually became a consultant in public health for 8 or 9 years. And then in the last couple of years, I've gone back to to general practice. I've done the returner scheme. So I've kind of, it's worked very well for me. I think it matches very well. And that's probably why I'm so interested in primary care networks now, is this opportunity seems to be coming around again for general practice to be doing population health approaches.
So let's start from the top. What do we really mean by population health?
Right. It's kind of a term that's been gathering momentum over the last few years. We've talked about public health. To me, it's a bit of a reframing of public health, but it is different. I think the King's Fund definition is really useful. If you look on the King's Fund site, there's a lot of resources on population health. And they define four pillars of population health, which is the wider determinants of health, healthy behaviours and lifestyles, an integrated health and care system, and the places and communities we work in. So those are kind of the four pillars. I think from a GP point of view, we are fairly comfortable thinking about healthy behaviours and lifestyles. That's part of our day job, you know, on an individual person-centred care level. And even looking at groups who've got particular risk factors. So that we're comfortable with that. And also integrated health and care systems. That is what it's been about for the last few years, isn't it? We're all talking about the fragmentation between health and social care and different bits of the healthcare system. And everybody is now talking about integration. So we're comfortable with those. But it's more challenging to be thinking about place-based approaches and about communities and what is our role in terms of communities and then the wider determinants of health. I think that's where it's there's more challenges for GPs to be thinking that way, but also many more opportunities.
So we'll come on to that in a second, perhaps looking a bit more at those opportunities and challenges in a bit more detail. But population health is really having a moment, isn't it? Not just in relation to primary care networks, but in all four nations to a certain extent. So why is that?
Yeah, now that's sometimes things get reframed, don't they? And then it catches a mood. It becomes a hot topic, doesn't it? And social prescribing is one of those things as well, isn't it? It has a moment. I think population health, it's been caught up at a strategic system-wide level because, and we maybe all agree, in the last few years, we've had a lot of rhetoric about prevention and that what has the biggest impact on health outcomes is not healthcare systems. Maybe, you know, a third, a quarter of health outcomes, you can say, are affected by healthcare systems. We've been saying that for years, but nobody's actually put their money into what makes a real difference. And I think now with 10 years of austerity after the credit crunch, we're all beginning to think we do have to do things differently. So the two things that I think have really changed is that we've shifted towards primary care, universal access to primary care, universal access to healthcare, primary care level. We really are shifting resources and money into that instead of just talking about it. And similarly, we talk about population health because that is where we're going to make the gains in terms of healthy life expectancy and reducing inequalities. So I think pennies are dropping that what makes a difference is not individual healthcare interventions.
And do you think that penny is dropping with GPs in general, or is it higher up in the system?
Well, a GP's job is fundamentally personalised care, isn't it? And that's what we really enjoy doing, that's what we're really good at doing, and that's what we should keep doing. And that's what general practices and the wider primary care team should be doing. And then extending that maybe into looking at prevention in terms of healthy lifestyles and so on. That is our job. It's not every GP's job to be thinking population, which is why the opportunity of getting into a bigger group. So like I've been very involved in supporting clusters in Wales, which was set up some years ago now. We've had 5 or 6 years of experience of that. And then networks. We've got general practices and primary care teams coming together at scale. And it's the people who have strategic leadership roles in there who are going to see the benefits of population health approaches. So it's not for every GP or every practice nurse or every link worker to necessarily have to be thinking this way, but the people strategically have to be thinking this way and then organising how we do primary care differently.
Okay, so thinking about primary care networks in particular and how they might be doing things differently, what are they actually being asked to deliver in terms of population health management?
I'm interested you say population health management, because that's a different that's a subset of population health approaches.
Tell me a bit more about that.
It's confusing, isn't it, using these terms? But population health management is basically population segmentation. You know, you define a particular group, and we do that all the time, don't we, in healthcare services, you know, people who have diabetes or people who are frail and elderly. It's defining that group and then putting in place the services and the, to meet the needs of that particular group. So that's a population health management approach. But population health is about place-based or communities in their entirety. So it's looking at how you improve the health outcomes of everybody, and crucially, the inequities within that. So the groups within your population who are more vulnerable, have worse health outcomes, that you do something to reduce those inequalities, and between your population and populations elsewhere. So in some ways, population health approach is probably going to have their biggest impact in terms of focusing on reducing inequalities and maybe shifting resources to where we can have the biggest impact to reduce those inequities in health outcomes.
So population health management's a bit more of a medicalised approach.
It is.
And risk stratification.
Exactly. And that is fine. That's absolutely fine. And we should be doing that in terms of how we design our services. But it doesn't really look at the wider determinants of health or what are we doing in terms of community assets. And that's where I think primary care networks can really come in. If you see us as primary care, as a community asset, then you can look around and think, who else in this community has the same goals, which is improving the health and well-being of this community? And you'll find that a lot of statutory services, you know, your local government, your, you know, including their social services, their education services, their, you know, for looked after children, you know, all those people, plus all those community groups, the voluntary groups, they're all actually working towards the same goals as you. So the advantage of that is that we can start doing systems leadership and systems work, and I think that is the key skill. You'll find that many GP practices will struggle to talk to anybody outside the NHS, and that's what I hear all the time from community groups, from local government. We cannot get into primary care. We write letters, we ring them up, we want to have meetings, but they don't engage. So there is that that we need to, at primary care network level, have the skills and the openness to really do systems leadership and systems working, because that's where the benefits will come back to us. It's a win-win.
And perhaps most importantly, the space, the headspace.
Exactly.
To develop these strategic alliances and to have the time to have discussions, which is a big ask, isn't it, of very new organisations. You know, there's over 1,000 new organisations who become PCNs with the equivalent number of leaders, many of whom are new to the system. This is perhaps their first big leadership role. They may be feeling quite overwhelmed by the demands that are being placed on them. So, I mean, how can you persuade them that this is a priority and that it will make life for them and their teams easier be better for their patients?
I think there's a proportion of kind of the new leaders coming forward who really get that anyway. Certainly, I'm seeing quite a lot of younger GPs who will say, how do you get into public health? I'm really interested in public health, global health. You know, there's the level of understanding is much greater, and there is that opportunity. I think if we just want the leaders to accept that there is a potential, well, there is a benefit in this. If you improve the health of your community, then the demand on your general practice will go down. If you engage with all the others in the community that are working towards health and well-being, the demand that's coming into us as GPs is a genuine need for something that we can't supply. There are people out there who can supply it. So it's a win-win. You know, we can meet the true need of the demand that's coming at us by engaging with other community assets. And if that actually does improve the health of the population, and some things can work quite quickly. I'll come on to an example later of where I think that you might actually get a return on your investment fairly quickly. But that, in the long run, demand reduces on general practice, and we reach those people at the moment who we are not reaching, the most vulnerable and the most likely to benefit.
We were just talking about examples, because I know that you've been working with, obviously you mentioned the clusters in Wales, and with primary care networks in Liverpool. Can you give us any examples or any lessons that you think might be helpful to other primary care networks or clinical directors who are embarking on this journey?
Your communities are different. Communities and their needs and their assets are different. So there's going to be things that are priorities in one community and not in another. So the opportunity to really do something practical locally, because one size does not fit all, we really, really do know that, and allowing those relationships to form. And I think that so much of this is about relationships, which is why it needs time, and it cannot be too prescriptive. So the service specifications coming in saying you must do this, this and this down to the tiniest detail will not have an impact on the health of your community. It really is about those relationships and coming up with solutions that are practical, implementable and different from one community to another. Of course, you can learn from other communities, but so the biggest priority for me would be the early years, giving every child the best start in life. And I think we don't maximise the potential of our contribution to that. And at a community level, if we can ensure that every pregnancy is a wanted pregnancy, every pregnancy is a healthy pregnancy, that breastfeeding rates are high, immunisation rates are high, children are ready for school, parenting skills, you know, that parents know how to give their children good mental well-being, make them resilient, make them secure. So we don't engage with all those people who could help us reach those goals. And I think the evidence on the impact of adverse childhood experiences, so much of our workload is those adults who have had damage in childhood. So the people with substance misuse problems, mental health problems, 3/4 of mental health problems start in adolescence or before. So I think if we can really focus on that, we don't need to do very much, but we need to engage with those who can help us do it. And you get a return on investment in a decade or so. You can ensure that the 6-year-old is not harmed or at least protected, and it's much wider than safeguarding. At the moment, we just have a narrow safeguarding lens on. If a child is actually not at risk of serious abuse, then we step back and we don't have a role. So I think some of these priorities appear if you start thinking population, which is my experience with one of the primary care networks, working through what can we do together that we can't do on our own. In the beginning, their priorities were people with complex mental health problems and frail older people. But by the end of a process of looking at the needs of our population, we added in giving every child the best start in life. So there are ways that we can do things differently to have a bigger impact and a return on our investment within a decade, sometimes sooner.
So some of those things will mean working in multidisciplinary teams across organisations, won't they?
Absolutely. And it's not necessarily about actually setting up new teams. Some of it is about forming relationships. So it's, for example, in Liverpool, we had 11 networks, and we have got funding for two GPs across the whole city for a couple of sessions to be the leads for community engagement, community development. So they are able to engage with the big voluntary sector organisations and talk about, we have social prescribers now, we have link workers, but there's no point having them unless you have something in the community that is actually going to, you know, going to deliver the interventions. So we've got the two lead GPs who really, really love community engagement, and this is, you know, they are passionate about it. So their input to the third sector collaboration to change how they provide and how they engage, I think that's going to pay off dividends. So we're not talking about everybody sitting in a multidisciplinary team, you know, round a desk and having those tedious conversations. It is about relationships and about shifting a culture, and that systems leadership is giving away some of your power, giving away some of your sometimes resources. You know, we have to be better about sharing our money, our people, our facilities in with an overall goal that this is going to improve the health of our whole community, and everybody else who can help us, we can share with them and we'll get that back.
Let's just talk about some practicalities. This is a very different way of working and thinking for most GPs. I know not all GPs will be involved individually, but what sort of skills and capacities do you think primary care networks need now in order to deliver this?
It's not everybody, you know, it's not for everybody, but it is for the clinical directors to have a good understanding of what population health is about. A lot of my colleagues who are the same as me, you know, it's one foot in GP land and one foot in public health land, we would love to see GPs with an extended role in population health. So if clinical directors would get that and would, in the new workforce, if we could have some of those GPs who do the doing, yeah. So the skills that I think the clinical directors need for everything they're doing is systems leadership and systems working. And it's kind of the negotiating skills, the relationship skills, building those. An understanding of community development, an understanding of asset-based approaches to community development, I think would be really useful. You need a grasp of how you use health intelligence, and GPs are good at that, aren't they? We're good at data. So widening that to the data that you need for your community, and then evidence. We are the people who are supposed to be doing evidence-based practice, which is something that's maybe some of our the other assets in the community that we're working with may not be as strong for them. So those are skills that we can bring. I would think that people on the steering group of primary care networks could use some understanding of that. But if we had GPs who were maybe part-time clinical and part-time experts in population health, have a much deeper understanding of that and act as the translators and the relationship builders and bring that expertise in, because I think these things can then happen much more quickly. And I know that the majority of people working in primary care want to do the day job. They want to see the patients. So it doesn't need everybody to do this. But I think if we get some people doing it, and I think there is a cohort, and the people that I'm talking to are most interested in this are the younger GPs who recently qualified, and they're floating around as locums because they want portfolio careers. They're not interested in partnership straight away. They're not interested in full-time clinical. And a lot of those are interested in this kind of way of working. So that's one big cohort. And we might tempt some of those into clinical work in hard-to-serve areas. So it's a kind of recruitment vehicle as well. You make create an attractive portfolio role there. And then there are the older GPs like me and maybe yourself who, you know, you're happy with your clinical work, but you're looking for something more strategic where you can use a lot of your kind of knowledge and experience and ability to work with other people, you know, the relationships, the skills that we developed in that. I think that it will be quite attractive to retain GPs later on in their careers, who can maybe say, well, if I do a little bit of clinical work, but I can really get into this because I know my community, I know the other people working in the community, I've made all these relationships with people in secondary care, people in social services. What I need is a bit of training and top-up skills, and then that's what I'd really like to do. So I think those are the two kind of areas that those cohorts of GPs who I think sit across the population health and clinical practice that we could really, really take advantage of.
That sounds really exciting. Makes it sound incredibly attractive and possibly even help with retention, which would be great.
I hope so. It's a job I would have wanted 30 years ago.
Well, I hope you're still going to stay on and do some of it.
Well, I no doubt.
Are there any particular resources that you might signpost clinical directors or PCN leaders to help them?
There's a huge amount of stuff coming out, isn't there, for PCN clinical directors, and some of the generic stuff about leadership and particularly systems leadership I think would be really useful. In terms of population health, the King's Fund I think has got a lot of good material. They have a 2-minute video on what is population health, which is a good starting point, but also some publications, and they do a series of conferences and webinars, so I think that's a really good source. Public Health England have a good resource called All Our Health. So that's a website with a huge amount of material on it. If you want to have a look at Wales, there's a lot of resources now that Wales has put onto a website called Primary Care One, which is all about supporting primary care clusters, primary care as a whole, but in particular through clusters. So there's a huge amount of resource there. Seeing as they've been doing it for 5 years, I think that's worth a look. And then things around public health in general, there's a website called healthknowledge.org.uk, which has a lot of traditional public health material on it. And then asset-based community development, I think, is worth looking into because that's a core skill, really, for what we're looking at. So I think these are all going to be on the website, aren't they? The links.
Yes, they will be.
For those.
There are also a number of resources for primary care networks on the primary care development pages of the Royal College of GP's website at www.rcgp.org.uk. Thank you so much for joining me today, Catherine. You're a tremendous advocate for the benefits of population health. And it sounds really very exciting. And also, you having had the practical experience already of delivering this kind of approach in Liverpool and Wales is great.
Thank you.
If you'd like to listen to further podcasts in this series, a list of topics and associated resources is available on the primary care development pages of the RCGP's website at www.rcgp.org.uk. That's all for now, and thank you for listening.